So I know it's not new news to say that the world is unsteady and chaotic. I mean, every day our world situation meets us immediately. I don't think we can turn away from the suffering and the uncertainty that surrounds us. I mean, we walk out the front door and we have to remember to wear our masks. Or perhaps, oh my gosh, I forgot to wear my mask. Reports of police brutality, the deaths from COVID, it doesn't stop. We spend a lot of time alone in sequestering, but we need to go forward with a sense of openness, courage, ethical discernment, as we continue to express our bodhisattva vow to live for the enlightenment of all beings. So we need to be resilient, for this is a time like no other. And the great round mirror of the Buddha mind, I think, is reflecting back to us our utter humanness. Suffering is universal. Everything is impermanent. There is no fixed self. And I know each of us in our own ways are suffering. I was hiking on a mountain and suddenly I fell and broke my ankle. Someone may be receiving a diagnosis of a serious illness. Somebody else is preparing for surgery. We may have a concern for a loved one, a son or a daughter. Someone might still feel unsettled without a real home or uncertainty about a job. So let's just for a moment hear the bell of our vulnerabilities. It's okay to turn there. Because still rising up in us is that still small voice that awakens us in surprising ways to live from that profound truth of our interconnectedness with all beings. So gifts of wisdom and compassion are being offered if we pay attention. So the truth is that both our awakenings and our sufferings live in our bodies. Our aliveness is our embodied life. We walk, we lie down, we rise up, we stand. We reach out, we break down with grief and rage and fear. We meet death every day. White people, in our fragility, we pull back and constrict our bodies to hold on to comfort zones. We bring so much to our cushions. Last week, we were able to share a meal with some friends because finally the air was clean enough. We could be outside 6 feet apart, wearing masks. And we enjoyed, you know, wonderful conversations. But to be honest, for me, it didn't matter what we were talking about. What mattered was that we could be there, body to body, with each other. It was an amazing healing experience. It's such a basic need. And one of the gifts of our Zoom Sangha is that we don't wear masks when we're together. This beautiful refuge enables us to sit together and unmask ourselves from our inner masks. We walk within together, opening our hands of thought, coming into our breath, and feeling safe enough to be open to whatever arises. So tonight, I'm going to be asking two questions. What gifts from the Dharma do we need right now? And how does compassion arise in this unprecedented time of world suffering? And as I was just alluding to, the Dharma awakens our embodiedness. And so I'm offering this encouragement to turn towards our embodied nature. Some say the Dharma is like rain. When we listen, the truth seeps into our robes, our clothes, our bones, our breath. Just as the Dharma saturates our bones and our breath, our being there, body to body, Zoom or not, offers an exchange through our senses, our movement, our face-to-face seeing of each other. There's potential for compassion and wisdom to flow back and forth. I was fortunate to read Joan Halifax's description. Joan Halifax is the Roshi of Upaya Zen Center. She wrote a description of a horrific accident she lived through. She fell and hurt herself so much. She was bleeding profusely. She couldn't get up. She was taken to the hospital. And while she was there, she had lost so much blood and her blood pressure had gone down so far, they had to immediately give her a transfusion. But the first responder that was trying to administer the transfusion, he couldn't find a vein that could take the blood. And it was a very frightening moment. But somehow, as Joan describes it, she was able to look out and see this man trying to help her. She saw distress on his face and she said, "How are you?" And then he paused and he said, "Well, my wife's just been diagnosed with cancer and I have to be here to work. It's very hard." And somehow in that exchange, connecting in that compassionate way, Joan's veins opened up. Physically, the blood came through. And you wonder whether this man probably was quite distracted and tense, but through the compassion that came from Joan to him, he could be more present and maybe focus more on finding her vein. So this is an incredible description of the physicality, the potential for compassion to enter into our whole body and flow back and forth. We give to each other. So last week, sitting on our deck with our two granddaughters, me in my wheelchair, when I let go in the moment into my embodiedness, it was as if everything came at once. The gentle breeze, the cool air, the green grass, our two grandchildren and John sitting around the table outside laughing. Deep ease and gratitude arose in these moments. So I'm beginning to understand more and learn that our suffering and the potential for ease and joy are all present in this moment if we open to the fullness and recognize our interconnectedness. I have a friend, a Dharma sister in Illinois. I hadn't talked to her for a very long time, but I heard that her sister had died over in Afghanistan and she was not being able to bring her body back over. I called her on the phone. She was very distressed. We had a deep sharing and, you know, all of her hurt and pain was expressed. I heard it and I got off the phone and I was so surprised that I felt happy. It's like, how come I feel happy? And then I realized, oh, we're connected. We're both alive. We're here for each other. So suffering and joy can arise together. I don't know if you read the story about Suzuki. He was in the hospital. They didn't know why he was so sick. He was going through all these diagnostic tests. So he was staying away from people because he thought he might be contagious. And so one day someone came to visit him and Suzuki said, I just learned I have cancer. Now we can share a meal together. You know, it's incredible, really. In the jewel mirror, it says, naturally real, yet inconceivable. Naturally real, yet inconceivable. This Dharma that saturated our robes, that moves between us together inner interconnectedness. But if it's inconceivable, thought can't reach this truth. So I want us, just in these moments together, to let go of the tendency to follow our thoughts, our love for wordedness, and turn towards the Dharma gates of imagery, metaphor, and sensations. Someone says, you can't drink from the word cup. So again, inviting us to let go of the wordedness so we can rest in our bodies and receive the images and sensations that I'm going to offer you, and notice what touches and welcome the opening. I'm recalling one day when I was on, I was on Sesshin. We'd been sitting all day. I had been listening to a Dharma talk, and suddenly an image of a baby bird arose. I actually felt like kind of like a baby bird sitting in a nest, and it was like my beak opened and I was being fed. The Dharma was literally feeding me. Every cell in my body opened. Every cell was fed. But remember, this aliveness can't be contained. It wants to go out into the world beyond ourselves. In another Dharma Hall discourse by Dogen, Dogen says, uphold the essence of the true directive. Geese drinking water enjoy its genuine flavor, penetrating the way in a straight line. Geese drinking water enjoy its genuine flavor, penetrating the way in a straight line. And then he says, bees take nectar from flowers and do not damage the remaining fragrance. Bees take nectar from flowers. Do not damage the remaining fragrance. So bees drink the nectar, which is always there, and then they fly away to make honey, receiving and then offering. This is our path. Drink the Dharma. Dogen says, even if Buddha's sermons don't reach, the Dharma entirely abides inside the seams between my fingers. Do you really see? Do you know this? Letting go is exactly like three hands and eight arms. Holding tight is exactly like water not leaking through. Open, let go, give, express. I remember a Dokusan I had with Reb during a winter intensive. I had an amazing realization, although I can't remember now what it was, but I wanted to hold on to it. And I was talking to him about it, and he said, you would be harming yourself to really hold on, because the Dharma is always becoming more than itself. The Dharma releases us into the next moment. The Dharma is alive just for you. So this very moment is everything. Drink the joy. Sing the song of the owl hooting in the tree. Taste the nectar with no need to hold on. Step out. Make contact with another. This is the activity of compassion. Naturally real, yet inconceivable. Yes, this is a time like no other. So we also need to, I guess, appreciate that this is also a time of great reflection. Because once we really engage in this Zazen practice, we are also confronted with our hindrances, our habit formations, our fixed views, our shadow sides of ourselves. Suzuki also says, practice begins where we fall down. From the withered tree, flowers bloom. From the withered tree, flowers bloom. We want to open to self-discovery, to recognize something about ourselves. Maybe we don't want to see, but we do want to discover the coverings. So we must go into turbulent waters to find the gold. Zenju Earth Lin Manual says, truth emerges through discomfort. She says, when we are bothered by someone, something, or ourselves, this is a knock of freedom. If we shut out the uninvited guest, that's going back to sleep. If we really want freedom, what is shut out will return again and knock on your door. Knock, knock, it's me again. So this is also a time to invite ourselves to fall down into the dark, to recognize our discomfort and touch the earth. And we want to stay in the dark because this is where mystery lives. In the mystery is the inconceivable, the illimitable truth of the Dharma. I've had to learn over and over again to sit with what arises in my meditation, especially if what's arising is conversations I want to have with somebody. If I have something difficult between my daughters, for example, in my meditation, suddenly I'm creating conversations and I'm so convinced that what I've decided to say is actually very sensitive and very empathic. But then as I rehearse sort of, suddenly my body becomes tense, sometimes squirmy, maybe anger arises. And even though I don't understand what it is about what I wanted to say, I know I have to sit with it. As long as those body sensations are trying to tell me something, I want to listen and wait in the dark. So I want to bring in a koan. It's called Jishan Swings the Sword. And this is actually the longest koan I've worked with. It's very complex, so mostly we won't be exploring the koan all the way through, but there's part of this commentary that I want to share with you. And remember, most koans are about dialogues between students and teachers. So Jishan goes to practice with Guishan, where he served as the rice maker. And just as he was sifting rice, Guishan said, gifts from donors should not be thrown away. Jishan said, I'm not throwing it away. Guishan picked up a grain of rice off the floor and said, you said you aren't throwing it away. Where did this come from? Jishan had no reply. Guishan said, don't take this one rice grain lightly. Hundreds of thousands of grains come from this one grain. Jishan said, then where does this one grain come from? Guishan laughed, returned to his room. That evening, he went back into the hall and he said, people, there's an insect in the rice. People, there's an insect in the rice. So, you know, there's much to explore here, but I first noticed how Jishan became quite defensive. I'm not throwing it away. And a second time, Jishan wants to stay in a kind of logical, intellectual mode by saying, well, where does this grain come from? And so we could pause here and see the story as an entrance into the dark by noticing when we get uncomfortable, when we get defensive, or when we stay in logical mind. Because again, this is a call to go into the dark. But the story brings something else up, because Jishuan says, gifts from donors should not be thrown away. What a wonderful thing to wonder about. What gifts am I throwing away? Maybe there's something that we're missing, or something beautiful that's coming towards us that we don't even see. Or hundreds of thousands of grains come from this one grain. Really saying, come into this moment of whatever's happening is the whole universe. The preciousness of one grain has all the grains of the world inside it. So our prejudices, our judgments, our biases may prevent us from seeing a gift. When John and I were sitting on the trail after I had fallen, I was kind of in a daze. We couldn't reach anybody because we didn't have satellite connection. And all of these hikers would come by and they'd stop and they'd look at me and they'd say, just get up and walk. And then they'd walk on. I mean, I didn't know my ankle was broken, but I just couldn't get up and walk. And then this couple was coming over the ridge, and the man had a cane, and there was a woman in front, and he had his arm on her shoulder. And this was a very rocky trail. There were boulders and sand, and they were kind of coming down the path. And, you know, he looked like he was blind, but I couldn't believe that here's a blind person hiking in this trail. And they came up to where we were, and I guess he could see something out of the corner of his eye. And he said, are you okay? And I explained what had happened. And then he said, is there anything I can do? And here's my own bias, my own prejudice, my own assumption. Well, no, there isn't anything you can do. I mean, I'm thinking in my mind, I mean, I'm worried about you on the trail. But then he paused and he said, could I just sit with you? Yeah, just this incredible gift suddenly came, breaking through, you know, these stereotypes I was applying. And I have to say that, you know, I didn't really receive his gift. You know, I said, thank you, that's very nice. But, you know, I wonder now, what would have happened if I had received the gift that was being offered to me? And then realizing, yes, that intimacy is threatening. So here we are, opening in this moment, like the bee drinking from the nectar of the flower and flying away to make honey. We open ourselves beyond ourselves towards our interconnectedness. James Baldwin says, to be sensual, I think, is to respect and rejoice in the force of life itself, and to be present in all that one does, from the effort of loving to the breaking of bread. But wait a moment. It could be our minds are still wandering, leaping ahead to the election next week, thinking finally we'll know what will happen. This need for certainty and stability and the assurance of justice runs deep. Yet, without catching how our mind might be working regarding the future, perhaps we lose our bearings walking in the Dharma. There's a poignant confession by Hakuin that comes up for me here. This is in Hakuin's words. One day, when I was in Mino province, I observed a cicada casting its skin in the shade. It managed to get its head free, and then its hands and feet emerged one after the other. Only its left wing remained inside, adhering to the old skin. It didn't look as though the cicada would ever get that wing unstuck. Watching it struggling to free itself, I was moved by feelings of pity to assist it with my fingernail. Excellent, I thought. Now you are free to go on your way. But the wing I had touched remained shut and would not open. The cicada never was able to fly the way it should have. Watching it, I felt ashamed of myself, regretting deeply what I had done. The Dharma abides inside the seams between our fingers. The bee flies away to make honey. Compassion is the activity that arises in our interconnectedness moment to moment. Don't think we are in control. Stay present. Listen to what flows between us through our senses. Enter the future with the exquisite knowing of how the cicada becomes free. Thank you for listening. So I welcome whatever came for you during this talk, thoughts you have, questions.
This is Linda. I'm worried about the insect in the rice.
You're worried about it?
I'm worried about the insect in the rice.
Okay. Would you say more?
No, I'm worried about it. What does it mean?
Well, did you have a thought there?
No. If I had a thought, I probably wouldn't be worried. I can't. You're muted.
But open up that question. I mean, I guess the way I sort of was living with it was that Shishuan was still not getting the point exactly. There was a kind of defensiveness, the need to sort of figure everything out, you know, not really wanting to be open to maybe a deeper teaching. And that we all have that. We all have a kind of blind spot or, you know, delusions that we're still carrying that make it hard to hear, you know, the full truth of, you know, of the inconceivable Dharma that's here for all of us. And so I think I was bringing that story in to invite us to also, you know, be aware of how that might be working in us so that we continue to, you know, recognize some of our hindrances, and that's part of our path right now. But that's just my thought. So,
thanks.
Similarly, with the cicada story, you know, it's like a kind of profound way that we have to keep opening. And not assuming that we know, or not holding on to a way we want something to become. That deep listening can arise in each moment in our encounter with what's being brought to us. Maybe you have other thoughts.
That story was really, seemed really clear to me. In fact, I was sitting there going, "Don't touch the wing," you know. but the insect in the rice seemed like a non sequitur. Like, yeah, I couldn't put it together. But what you say makes total sense. That he was still being defensive. And goodness, we all feel that sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You're muted.
Sorry. Maybe this is also about the tendency where we think we have to do it perfectly or we have to be perfect, you know, that we're always in the muddy water and that's what it's about. Sarah?
Maybe the insect is also a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yes, say more.
Well, it's unexpected, and maybe we're repulsed by it because it's in our food, and it's not something that we're used to eating, but it's also eating and benefiting from the rice. Mm-hmm. It's living its life there. Mm-hmm. So the initial revulsion is maybe we are turning away from a teaching because it doesn't match our expectations of what should be in rice. Mm-hmm. And that's our loss, I think, if we do that.
Yes, if we just get sort of caught up with the aversion or the turning away, we're going to miss the gift again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Kenny's hand is up.
Oh, Kenny, hello.
Yeah, I have not even a Zen question, but how did you get down from the mountain with a broken ankle?
I want to know too.
Oh, well, I had 10 first responders put me in a gurney and carried me a mile and a half out. It took an hour to get me out. Yeah. Amazing experience. Mm-hmm.
How did they find out that you needed them?
Oh, well, we didn't have, there was no satellite access, so we couldn't call the rangers. It was a little scary. But suddenly I thought, well, why don't we call 911, which we did. Somehow they answered, and then they called the rangers, and then took the rangers an hour to get to us, but they came. So, yeah. Yes, any other responses? Oscar?
Hi, thank you, Darlie, for the lovely talk. Regarding the insect and the rice, I have nothing to say about it. But I have an image of perhaps a bowl, a mass of white rice, and a black insect, maybe a weevil, just inhabiting or infesting that pure white rice. Mm. And it's such a small thing, but it you know, in the mass of our... In the mass of our good deeds and our good effort in preparing rice, let's say, for an assembly, there can be a little resistance, a small thing that really kind of makes a big difference. But what I had my hand out about was a question. You talked about embodiment, the importance of embodiment of the practice, and it brought to mind a saying about turning the light within, about taking the backward step, learning to take the backward step to shine the light within and illuminate the self. And I have a sense that, so I wonder what that advice, if you do correlate that advice with embodiment.
Correlate.
What does that mean, to take the backward step? To learn to take the backward step. We're told that if one takes the backward step, then the light does shine within and the self is illuminated.
Yeah.
Taking the backward step is important.
Yes. I mean, yes, of course, that's our practice. I guess I was sort of alluding to that with the great round mirror. I mean, in our practice of turning within and being aware of what's arising, we're also shown things that we wouldn't be able to see or know otherwise. And that great bright mirror is sort of like illuminating our whole being, our whole embodiedness. And that includes, you know, our feelings, our senses. It includes, you know, the experience of being interconnected or not. So I had this experience where I became aware that my eyes were looking at a big dead leaf on a branch in my atrium. And it was as if my eyes were cutting this branch off. And I was really startled to discover that my eyes weren't just seeing, my eyes were creating a particular focus that had an aversion in it. I didn't like that dead branch. I was going to cut it off. But then meanwhile, you know, my eye expansion started to happen once I became aware. So it was completely embodied. But I also, the awareness showed me, you know, where my delusion was at work. So, I don't know if that responds.
Perception is delusion, they say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's from the body, I guess, I was trying to respond to that part of your question.
The eye.
Yeah.
The function of the eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did any of the images speak to any of you or awaken something in you or Carolyn? You have to unmute yourself.
I was really struck again about how important it is to embrace the darkness. Mm-hmm. And even the darkness that we're now living in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the study group that we're doing on Thursday, and I'm going, we would not be doing this if we did not, you know, one is we had this Black president, and because we had this Black president, we got to see a lot of the darkness that involves our entire country around racism, and we're looking at that issue in a way that we haven't before. Or at least I'm looking at it in a way that I haven't looked at it before. And that the only way that would happen is by visiting the darkness. We weren't living in this community where these horrible things were happening. I wouldn't have to look at me around this issue. And only in that do I have a possibility of moving beyond it. And so in that dark, and I think that's what you were talking about, that we need to go into that darkness with that openness and that willingness and to just turn the wheel again and not necessarily move out of it, but to stay in it until we know what it is that we're to know. And
yeah.
We don't even know when it is that we know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Thank you, Carolyn. Mm-hmm. Yes, and something that supports that, I think, is the not having to word everything right away, you know, to tolerate the mystery, trust the mystery. Thank you.
Yeah, Dorley. Larry said his hand up for some time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Larry. You're way up in the corner in my screen. I'm sorry.
And then Trish.
and then Trish, and then Peter, and then Clem, and Laura. Great. Larry.
Wonderful talk, Dorley. I enjoyed it very much. And I noticed that from one section of your talk, that how do we learn the Dharma? I think broad theoretical discussions of what the Dharma is one thing, but when you recognize something in a talk that you've experienced directly in your life, that's where I think some learning can go on. And you said something, I think you were talking about the man who walked down with the cane and wanted to sit with you, and you said something about there was a gift there, but at the moment I didn't appreciate it. And I've had something like that occur in my life recently. And so I resonate with it. And it's, sometimes gifts are not readily apparent. You know, I'm the kind of person that I need to be hit over the head with a stick sometimes to realize things. And so it was only afterwards that I realized that this gift was offered, but I missed it. In fact, even more than that, I turned away from it. Mm-hmm. But in the moment of it happening, I was I was kind of oblivious to it.
Wow.
Only after did I realize.
Yes.
So, sometimes moments are lost, and that's a moment that's lost. You mm-hmm. you never recreate it, but I take heart in having realized it after the fact. Yes, so,
right. Yeah. So you did see it.
I saw it a little bit later than yeah. Mm. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we don't see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Trish? I don't see her here.
You don't see me?
Where? Wait. Oh, there you are. Okay, great.
I'm on the phone, so it's kind of... thank you for that talk. I appreciate it, too. And I liked... I had an image when you were talking about the man touching the wing and clearing it, trying to get the wing loose.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because so many times in my life, it's like a consideration. You want to help, but maybe that help isn't quite what you need to do. Yeah. And it comes to mind that there's that idiot compassion and wisdom compassion.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, well, is this really what needs to be done? Or do I just get in there and, because I think I need to do something that I think I need, that I know that maybe my way would be better to fix it. Mm. And then just like that, that poor cicada just couldn't fly.
Yeah.
But just that little, and I just know that I have a tendency, you know, to get in there and fuss, you know, and help it, help something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see that, and it's skillful means to be able to let it be, maybe, you know, to know when to let it be and when to help.
Yeah, yeah, right. I was sort of hoping that kind of image can help us remember, too. It's like that image really can live in us, you know.
Yeah, it's a strong image. It's one that I'll definitely be able to have.
Yeah, yeah.
In the process. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm. So let's see, Peter?
Yes. I am thinking that when one is injured, I really liked the image that you portrayed of being injured and in need on the trail with your husband. Mm-hmm. And it is an opportunity at that point to you know, when the next time I'm in such a situation, I'm going to hopefully think, this is my chance to be generous, to allow somebody such mm-hmm. as the man with the cane, who I'm going to just split hairs and just be very literal. He offered to be with you. I don't want to say he wanted to be mm-hmm. with you, but he offered.
Yeah.
You know, he might have been hoping she'll say no. But what I like the idea of, for me, being, you know, I'm a slow thinker. I may be very fast in some aspects, but I'm very slow in other aspects. And so if I don't know what to do for a person or in a certain circumstance, I may need a few minutes. And so it might behoove us, you know, and I'm certainly talking to myself as well right now. If I'm injured, I might just say to any stranger, would you mind just keeping me company for a few minutes while I assess how you might be able to help me?
Oh.
And just allow that being injured and being welcoming allows people to show up. Mm. There was also a John Irving book from the mid 80s, Prayer for Owen Meany. I read this book during medical school, and I'm not a reader, but this book really stuck with me. And this little boy had this sense of purpose that he was going to be needed. And he was at the end of the novel. And it was for a particular situation, and he showed up and was a hero. But I'm to be clear, as a needy person, as an injured person on a mountain, I would be looking to be generous, to be welcoming of any help that shows up. And I just, lastly, I want to say that I appreciate Linda saying, is there any announcements? And what I basically experience all of us doing is being polite and being quiet in our squares and really not being so generous as to say, this is who I am this week. I want to just say bicycle poster mashed potatoes. And I just want to be known, you know, in those 5 seconds as, you know, saying some little silly haiku or just connecting. And I really want to say kudos to all those people, such as that man with a cane, who just offers to be with you. I hope to do the same in the future. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks. Wow. Let's see. Laura?
Hi.
Hi.
So you guys are going to have to forgive me because I'm emotional already. But I wanted to say that your story of there's too many hormones in my body right now.
Okay.
Your story of being stuck there in the most unlikely person stopping to offer
right
to sit with you.
Yeah. This is very moving.
It really resonated with me because there was a time when I had something very, very tragic happen, and I had been traveling, and I was in Wisconsin, and I was sitting outside waiting for my bus or my train or whatever it was. It was like an hour away. And there was snow all over the place because it was December, and I've lived in California my whole life, so you can imagine. And I was just crying and crying and crying because I had just received this very tragic news.
Oh, wow.
And all these very, you know, from outward appearances, these very well-to-do people, business people that were in a rush or in a hurry to get to work, were just walking past me.
Yeah.
And completely ignoring and, mm-hmm. you know, paying no attention. But the most unlikely person came up to me.
Wow.
And put their hand on my shoulder and said, whatever it is that you're going through, it's going to be okay. Huh. And that's a gift I've carried with me.
Hey, wow, how powerful.
Wow. The person that from outward experiences, you would think they were struggling in their own life. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think of them as being approachable. You might have even been frightened by their appearance. And they were the most, this very kind-hearted, the only one to stop and say something.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's such a it's never left you. It was so powerful because the one person you wouldn't have even imagined could be there and help you was the one who did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think Clem, you have to unmute yourself.
Doralee, I had no comment other than to say thank you for your talk. It was enlightening, if you will.
Thank you. Oh, Meg wants to say something.
I sort of want to piggyback on Clem. Your talk will go with me in the coming days. It was very, very much moved within me. Found it very beautiful. And this whole concept of finding the compassion in the darkness, the whole sense of the compassion, the connectedness, was just, and the way that you talked, ways you talked about it in the stories and about yourself and how open you were in sharing and in the koans. I just very moved by your talk, profoundly moved by your talk. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know what time it is, but maybe. Oh, here's.
It's 8:30.
Okay. So just to double check if there's anyone else that would like to say something.
I just wanted to say, Doralee, thank you too. I really enjoyed your talk and, I have this 19-year-old cat here, and it jumped on my lap, and it was purring the whole time while you were speaking.
Oh.
What really touched me is when you were saying that about the wisdom and the compassion, it's paying attention because it is there.
Yeah, and right.
Often reflect. So that really touched home for me.
Good. Great, yes. And your cat was there. And Jana wants to speak.
Hi, Doralee.
Hi.
I'm on the phone, so I can't see everybody else's square. So one thing you said about the joy and suffering arising at the same time, if that's what I heard correctly. I was reflecting on that and wondering if I've had that experience. And at first, I didn't think I did. I don't know if I've ever experienced joy and suffering arising at the same time. And I still am not sure I have, but then I was thinking a little bit after a little while, the feeling of gratitude, I was thinking that might be the closest that that joy and suffering arises, because gratitude does seem to have that kind of bittersweet quality or, you know, that. And then the other part of this is kind of a technical question. From the second foundation of mindfulness, that every moment of consciousness has or experience has a contact has either experience of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Then does that contradict this what you're saying about suffering and joy arising at the same time? I'm not sure.
Yes. So, yeah. Well, that's a good question. I mean, I guess the way I hold all of this is more in a synergistic kind of way. Like we don't just have pleasant, unpleasant as sort of separate entities or something, that if we're really open, that we're wanting those dualities to soften so they can sort of work together to open us further. And so, you know, it's like with my friend Carol, whose sister died, you know, I could, you know, sort of focus or concentrate on her suffering. But that's sort of, it's not as open of a field or something that can let something else come in too at the same time. I'm probably not answering your question very well, but it's more like noticing the possibility of that maybe our experiences are more complex than, you know, those sort of labels or something. But maybe someone else has another way of responding. But what you said is really, you know, a wonderful description. Gratitude is a kind of joy, or, you know, opening of life force coming in. And I mean, I'm more into these more emotionally embodied expressions. So I've been sort of tracking in Dogen's work the way where he expresses deep emotion. And he, you know, he says, I wept in gratitude, for the Dharma, and, you know, things like that. So that, you know, that's sort of the fullness, you know, that can include the joy or the gratitude or the connection itself, the aliveness between people. It exchanges something.
Doralee, I can give an example.
Yes.
Where they both coexist. Mm-hmm. And an example where suffering is not necessarily something to run away from. It is part of life. Mm-hmm. A simple example is a marathon runner. The mm-hmm. suffering that runner goes through, yet at the same time accompanied mm-hmm. by the joy of the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Let's bring up thoughts for anyone else. How can they coincide? Well, thank you all for being here, and we could just do the after lecture chant.